grad student. It's the Monster Mash. I'm just kidding. Happy October! It is the first episode of the month of October, and you know what that means. A Patreon patron shout-out. Everyone who is a $5 patron and up gets a shout-out during the podcast intro once a month so that you all know that they have my undying love and are the reason that this podcast continues to exist. So thank you to Brianna Williams, Brittany Hockey, Davis Bourne, Faith Newsome, Hannah Shows, Jeremy Gloger, Vikram Baliga, William Oda, my mom, Ryan Science, Jacqueline Siegel, and a special thanks to podcast fellow Isaac Bisla. Now, last week during my episode intro, I announced that the podcast is now selling bisexual merch for a cause in honor of Bi Visibility Day, and I'm donating 50% of all profits between September 23rd and October 23rd to the Trevor Project, which aims to end suicide in LGBTQ+ young people and provides crisis prevention and services to that population. Well, the response to the merch has been huge, and over 60 items have already been sold in just a week. I've had about 10 or so people message me on Twitter and Instagram asking for merch for other identities and sexualities. Now, originally I was against this because I don't hold those identities and I kind of felt icky about it, but after conferring with folks on Twitter, it seems like the true consensus is that because I am part of the LGBTQ+ community, it isn't actually that icky, and I've also decided that with this new collection, which, by the way, covers like 20 different pride flags, will always have 50% of profits donated to an LGBTQ+ organization. For the rest of 2021, that will be the Trevor Project. And maybe I'll do something fun like a poll or something else for where that money will go in 2022. I also wanted to give a quick shout out to some folks I had some extra help from. Shout out to Annabelle Gong and Lex Police Pharaoh, both former guests on this podcast. I'm happy to say that I will be compensating them both for their design help, guidance, and mostly me going back and forth with them on Twitter like, what about this? What about that? Thanks. So thanks to you both. To shop this collection, you can go to deargradstudent.com/LGBTQIA. That's deargradstudent.com/LGBTQIA. Also, if you see that I'm missing a pride flag, please let me know. I did as much research as I could to find as many as possible that seem legit, so just let me know if I missed one and I'm happy to make it. All right, once again, I am taking up precious podcast time to talk about the ways this podcast is growing, and if you think about it, it's all because of you. So really, it's your fault. Anyways, let's get started with today's episode. Today's episode is all about coping with emotionally taxing PhD topics with third-year PhD student Benjamin Katz. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to your favorite grad school podcast, Dear Grad Student, the podcast where grad students can come together to celebrate, commiserate, and support one another through this long and difficult journey. I'm Alana. I'm a fifth-year doctoral student and your host, and I am joined today by a third-year PhD student studying prevention of and recovery from interpersonal violence, Ben Katz. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. This, I feel like it was such a long road from like talking on Twitter, getting you on the podcast. And then once we were talking today, I was like, oh, it's been 20 minutes. We should start.
No, absolutely. It's been a long road, but I'm happy we're at this journey now.
Oh my gosh, me too. And like you said earlier, before we started recording, I'm happy to take this journey with you. I feel like this is going to be, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm really excited for this episode. Before we get there, I'm going to time manage and start with social media shout outs. Where can the folks listening to this episode connect with you online? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so the best place to find me is on academic Twitter.
That's right.
And so my handle is at Ben W. Katz. And so I think that'll be in the show notes. And then also you can connect with me or, you know, check out some of my research and work that I do on my website that I recently developed. And that will also be in the show notes, but it's BenjaminWKatz.com.
I love that you call it show notes, like so official. Like even I'm still like the episode description, because I just feel like everyone knows what the episode description. If I say show notes, I feel like some people will be like, oh, she's a real podcaster. And other people will be like, what are show notes? And I'm like, I can't decide. I can't commit. I don't want to make it hard, but they're not called episode description. It's called show notes. Very official. You're so prepared.
Oh, thank you. A professional guest.
That's right. That's right. So yes, if you want to go ahead and follow Ben, just go ahead, go down to the show notes or episode description, click their name, and you'll find their page right there. Or website, hire them. Hire Ben. Do it. Are you on the job market?
A couple years, so.
Okay. Yes, same. Well, let's go ahead and get into today's episode. So we're going to be talking about emotionally charged PhDs and dealing with all of that. And I think that particularly for this episode, it's important to put you in context and what you research. And I really think that will highlight why you're such a perfect guest for this episode. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you research? What's your thing? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my research really centers around the prevention of and recovery from interpersonal violence. And, you know, I really started this work when I was an undergraduate student at the University of New England. And so this is, you know, a small liberal arts college in Bedford, Maine. And, you know, it really
so
like
beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Right on the coast.
Painting me this picture. Did you have a lot of lobsters up there?
Oh, yeah. I went right on a boat, you know, picked a fresh one from the ocean. Yes, it was.
I went to school in like the armpit of Ohio, and here you are like on the coast with the lobster.
Well, I'm sure the corn was great there.
No corn.
Okay.
No, I know. Like that far, like deep Ohio. Anyways.
I see. Well, yeah, so my sophomore year, we had a new faculty and department chair start, and her name is Dr. Trish Long, and she is a clinical psychologist by training, and her research really explored the long-term consequences of adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse.
Oh.
And, yeah, and so...
Interesting.
Yeah, it was an area that, you know, trauma, you know, certainly like growing up, you hear about, you know, trauma and whatnot. But to, you know, think about it in more of an academic setting or context, it was, you know, definitely different, you know, as I was reading journal articles and, you know, hearing how they're describing kind of the conceptualization of recovery from trauma.
Wow.
You know, I think that was really right the start of this whole journey. And, you know, I was fortunate to work with Trish over the course of my undergraduate career for, you know, the 3 years that I was there. And, you know, we worked on a series of different projects looking at the recovery or kind of variability in adjustment among survivors of adult sexual victimization, as well as childhood maltreatment broadly.
Yeah. So it's like you have had this experience with a really emotional research topic really from the start. And I don't know why, but this immediately came to my head because I think this is something that people kind of wonder about. And what comes to my head is like Law and Order SVU, which I definitely binge watched as a kid and like a teenager and onward. But it always ends after an episode, right? And then they're like, and now they're fine. And it, not to say that they aren't, like we know with trauma, not everyone develops PTSD, not everyone has long-term effects, but for those that do, there's not a lot structurally set up to help them recover from that necessarily, like societally, and it's a huge problem. So I think that it's such an important topic, and it's, I think, one that people are somewhat scared about because it's so emotional to research and to be involved with. That, so you did that in undergrad. And so then what was next for you after that?
Yeah. So after, as a senior undergrad, I applied to clinical PhD programs. And, you know, like many who apply right from undergrad, you know, I found that I wasn't offered a position anywhere. So I, you know, pursued a post-bac research assistantship.
Good for you.
And yeah, thank you. And, you know, I was fortunate to get a position at the Anxiety Disorder Center, which is a specialty clinic on the Institute of Living's campus in Hartford, Connecticut. So I was able to go back to my home state for my post-bac, which was really nice to reconnect with my family and friends.
Also lobsters or like not lobsters?
Not lobsters,
okay,
mainly.
That's
at least
okay.
Where I'm from in Connecticut.
Yes, it's okay. It's okay. We don't judge. It's fine. It's okay.
And yeah, so, you know, I worked as a research assistant, and I worked at, again, the Anxiety Disorder Center, and I worked on two primary projects to start. And, you know, I was working under Dr. David Tolan, who, you know, does a lot of research looking at kind of the biomarkers of anxiety and related disorders. Yeah.
That's kind of what I do, that kind of stuff. I do biomarker work with aging.
Oh, yeah. It's really, I think, valuable work. And, you know, as we kind of get a better understanding of kind of the biological sort of underpinnings of different, you know, psychological disorders or conditions, you know, it can be, you know, I think powerful to think about how we can, you know, eventually advance, you know, treatments and whatnot to be able to specifically target these markers.
Yeah. Well, and it relates to my own research, because something that I'm particularly interested are like things that happen in our young adulthood or that happen in adulthood that are affecting us in like our 60s and 70s. Like something that's like really traumatic can increase some of these biomarkers that, like, it's a protective response, right? The body's like, I gotta respond to this. I gotta protect. I gotta, you know, heal, whatever. But when we have that over time, it like can really be detrimental to our bodies. Like a lot of these folks develop chronic illnesses. The body is just working overtime so hard to like try to survive and be okay. And it's so much physical stress on the body when there's a trauma mentally that is still being processed and not worked with. So this like relates to me in a tangential sense, but I'm like, I vibe with it. I'm like, yes, this is important. Do this.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, like the HPA axis, mm-hmm. and kind of the psychoneuroimmunology, like
That's
I think all
I
of
do.
That work is, yeah, super important and really valuable.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so I, you know, started doing research. The first was a project that I worked on was looking at the neural mechanisms of CBT response for individuals with hoarding disorder. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You're like, okay, I feel like every television show I watched growing up is like what you now research, because I loved watching Hoarders. Which is like weird to say, but I'm a psychologist. I can say it.
Absolutely. You know, it's, I think, you know, individuals with hoarding disorder, in my experience, like there's a lot of distress that those individuals experience, and certainly, you know, impairment as it relates to their living conditions you know, relationships and whatnot. So I was really grateful. That was the main grant that I was hired on. The next, you know, that I worked on was an exploratory grant looking at, you know, the central nervous system mechanisms of hyperventilation among folks with anxiety disorders.
Oh, like panic attacks and things.
Exactly. So I voluntarily induced hyperventilation using a neat metronome, and yeah, had folks you know, hyperventilate while I measured their brain activity, and yeah, it was a journey.
Oh my gosh, I just think this is so cool because I do PNI. So like every time you're talking about this kind of thing, I'm like, that's the clinical application of what I do, but I don't do the clinical application of it. But I'm like, this is so important. And so you are in a clinical psych program now, so tell me a little bit about what you're doing in grad school.
Yeah, so, you know, right now in my graduate training, like, I guess to kind of blend my undergraduate experience and my post-bac experience, looking at both the outcomes of various traumatic experiences, as well as understanding kind of the mechanisms underlying treatment response. In graduate school, you know, I'm right now working in Dr. Sean Cahill's lab. And or for my thesis, I'm, you know, working on a project that is following the line of work that I was doing in undergrad, looking at, you know, factors that are associated with sexual violence victimization. And particularly, I'm interested in studying the occurrence of sexual violence among folks in the sexual and gender minority communities. And so, yeah, you know, we know that folks that identify as a sexual and or gender minority are at an increased risk for experiencing sexual victimization. However, the factors that are related to that are less understood. So,
yeah.
You know, that's my goal for my research project, for my thesis, to be able to help communities that have been historically neglected within the research literature.
Wow. I mean, really important work just in that way, but also everything that you've talked about. I think that it's so clear that you have a pretty extensive history treating and exploring different aspects of trauma or really distressing mental health, you know, things that might be going on with folks. You know, I don't have a strong background in trauma, but I was a dialectical behavioral therapist and group leader. And so for those listening at home, not everybody who is in that group has a history of trauma, but there is a high percentage of folks who DBT is helpful for who have gone through trauma. So it's not a prerequisite, but it's something, one of those like common things that we find. So definitely dealt with trauma, but I've not focused on it, certainly not focused on childhood sexual trauma like you have. But it is your experience is what makes me really excited for this episode, because it really, I mean, it really serves like three purposes, right? PhD work itself is stressful. It is taxing on emotional and mental health. Just like look at academic Twitter for 5 whole seconds to figure out that that's true. But there are also some grad students like you in clinical psych or others who study topics that maybe for them personally, it's emotional, that have this reality of their work adding on to the emotional tax we're all already dealing with. But this really cool part of this episode and your experience with trauma is that it does set you up to perfectly discuss these layers and hopefully offer advice. I mean, definitely. I'm going to ask you for advice. Spoiler alert. You know. So thank you for being here. And I really want to jump into this just by saying, like, you've now talked about what, you know, some of the things you researched, some of the things you've gotten to work on. How has your journey been with all of that? This is a very like day in the life question, but I do feel like it's relevant for this episode just to say, like, how are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it certainly has been a journey.
Love you know, talking about journeys on the podcast.
Totally. You know, I you know, started this trek by moving out to the Midwest in, you know, the August of 2019 to start my program at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So this is, you know, my first experience living in the Midwest.
You know, I'm from Cleveland.
Thank you. It feels good to be here.
Where are you? What part of the country are you originally from?
So Connecticut. And
Oh, that's right. You already said that. Oh, see, I like the East Coast more than the Midwest, but don't tell anyone.
You know, it's my favorite, not going to lie, but yeah, I'm starting to really love the Midwest and especially these cheese curds here.
Oh my God,
you know,
I was going to say, is that the cheese place?
Definitely.
Oh, God bless cheese.
And so, yeah, so this is my first, you know, time out here. And, you know, I moved alone. Like most PhD students that relocate, I think there's certainly an acclimation period. And that absolutely was the case for me, not only to this new lifestyle as a PhD student and tax bracket.
Relatable.
Right? But, you know, also I found that there was a lot involved in the acclimation period around grief, you know, as we think about, you know, stepping into a new chapter of our life. Mm. And, you know, new experiences will ultimately need room to, you know, manifest and create. And so I think, at least in my experience and, you know, my knowledge about grief is that, you know, that emotion can help free up space that we can spend in other meaningful ways.
Wow, that was really powerful. I really was just like, wow, that's so true. Because I feel like I experienced this because I went straight from undergrad. And I've actually never thought of it this way until you just said this. But I feel like the really difficult adjustment I had into adulthood and into grad school was like kind of grieving for my younger self. Like I was going to be different from then onward. And I just had to do that fast because I was here and doing it and people were already past that and older than me. And like, yeah, wow. Yeah. Oof.
And yeah, you know, I think that's a great point too. Like, you know, in terms of like everybody starting graduate school at a different stage in their life, you know, some coming right from undergrad, like in your experience, and then others, you know, maybe going on later in life or taking, you know, a gap year and then going into graduate school. And, you know, I think through all of those experiences, we have sort of a sense of self, whether it's, you know, our work identity, our identities as it relates to our close friendships and our communities back home. And, you know, it can be a process to, you know, shift into a new sense of self as it relates to being a PhD student or a graduate student. And so, yeah, I certainly found that grief was a central theme for at least the first year. And then COVID hit in the March of my first year. So certainly there's a lot of grief and loss there. But I really, I found that through this whole process, you know, it was really valuable to help me reflect on what was important to me in this new chapter and reevaluating some of the values that I hold now in this new phase of my life.
Yeah, I went through the same thing. I was actually talking to some friends about this yesterday because I was like, I feel like it was COVID that made me finally feel okay if my life doesn't end up in an academic job. Like before I was like, this is it. I will die on that hill and like, I want to be this, blah, 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 blah. And suddenly I'm like, you know what? If I don't get an academic job, like, would it be the end of the world if I was a senior researcher at Cleveland Clinic and living back home? No. Most of my grandparents are still alive. You know, like, you just start, like, thinking about, like, time is still passing. There's no time to waste. So I love that grief was, like, what you brought into this conversation because of what it has now done to me mentally. Like, my wheels are turning. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the emotion that I've been coping with. And I feel like that's what's kind of been happening through aging is like, as I'm getting older, not only has every year been different, but you have to like kind of let go of who you have been to become your new self. And so like, I'm curious if you have felt that through all the things you've studied, going through grad school with COVID, I know you've also gone on your own journey with your own identity. Do you feel like it has been difficult to study such an emotionally charged like topic? What has that been like for you?
Yeah, you know, I found that, you know, it has been challenging. And, you know, I definitely want to say that the challenges and difficulties that I have experienced through studying this formally, like in no way sort of pales in comparison to, you know, the traumatic experiences, the loss that, you know, the folks that I study have experienced.
Sure.
And, you know, I definitely just want to preface that. And, you know, I think that the work that I've done and the research that I've read and I've spent years of my life focusing on has really, I think, illuminated things about the world that I think people studying different topics might be able to shield themselves from or,
yes,
you know, be able to otherwise look the other way.
Yes.
You know, to maintain and uphold certain worldviews, belief systems. And I think for me and my experience, like a lot of the emotional processing that I've experienced over my time studying these topics has involved reflecting and updating some of my worldviews and maybe grieving the loss of certain worldviews that I held previously, you know, when thinking about the experiences of my clients or, you know, research participants.
Right. Like knowing like, oh, these things are really happening. They're happening to people where I live. They're happening to people who are seeking help from me. And they're happening to people that maybe if you saw them on the street, you would have no idea. Right? This isn't like, I think that that's one of the biggest things is like, I think some of these things are so stigmatized that you'd think, oh, this person must look like they're a mess and they can't hold a job and that they're struggling. And it's like, no, in fact, a lot of these people have developed such mechanisms to overcome some of these traumas without maybe processing them properly that you might have no idea. And that's kind of the point. That's where it can be damaging.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I think a common belief that many hold is, you know, this just world belief around people who have experienced trauma are, you know, deserving of that.
Right. Or like bad, you know, things happen to bad people. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And, you know, good things happen to good people. And, you know, if I were to experience a traumatic event, you know, this must mean that I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
And, you know, when really thinking about more of the nuance around trauma, it's helped me recognize that trauma is pervasive in our society. Yes. I mean, take a look at COVID. For
I was just going to say, if COVID isn't the perfect, like, and that's the kind of thing, like, I've talked to my boyfriend about this where I'm like, I feel like this has been kind of traumatic for me, even though it's been like a slow burn. And that's why I think that this is so relevant, right? Because when we think about grieving worldviews, when I was an undergrad, college was so cool. University life was it. Like, I was that bitch. And then I was like, I want to keep doing this. I love being in college. And you come to grad school and you're like, oh, it's like this. Like, that is how people view undergrads. That is how people treat grad students. And your worldview of like professors being this wonderful, perfect, yada, 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 also breaks down. And that's hard. That was hard for me for grad school. And then COVID's been a trauma for everyone. So I agree with you. Like, obviously, this does not pale in comparison. And there are grad students who have experienced traumas like we're talking about as well. But just in trying to make this as generalizable as possible, I think it's important to remind grad students, like, you have been through things. Even if you're doing great right now, like, this has been hard. And some people, like, study really emotional things. And there's a thing in psychology that we called secondary trauma. And what secondary trauma is, essentially, is sort of like when you burn out from constantly absorbing other folks' stories and situations. And it's not It's not in like, oh, they're a burden way at all. It's more of you're doing your job. Your job is to listen and hear this and absorb it and be able to help those folks. And sometimes you're helping a lot of folks or you're helping a really intense situation that you need to process and go through. And I think that in some ways, at times in grad school, we also experience this, even if we're not necessarily therapists.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I think that something that is really important in my experience is kind of the depth at which I process information personally. And, you know, I consider myself a pretty highly sensitive person.
Me too.
And, you know, I think that it's such a gift in my experience, even though I haven't held that narrative my whole life. I used to, you know, hold this perspective that, you know, oh, I'm just like too sensitive and whatnot. But, you know, honestly, it's been such a gift as I've been able to navigate my world and use my sensitivity as more of a superpower.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love that. Oh, my God. I also feel this is so funny you say this because being a DBT therapist, most people who come in for DBT have, you know, borderline personality disorder or like on the borderline for borderline personality disorder. And one of the traits or one of the things we tell folks is that often DBT is helpful for people who feel emotions very strongly. And I will always say to clients, I feel emotions very strongly too. You know, this is about learning how to respond to those. Like strong emotions aren't a bad thing, right? It's information. And right. So I always say that to clients when I was seeing them, like, I am a highly emotional person. I do relate on that front. And most of them are like, oh, thank God, because I can't see a therapist who doesn't get that most things just feel intense. I'm intense. I feel things intensely. My whole world is intense. And that's my reality. And I feel very similar about once hating that about myself and now being like, I podcast.
Absolutely. No, totally. And I think within the context of the trauma work, you know, both in terms of my research and, you know, clinical work, I think it's being a sensitive person. It's been important for me to, you know, think about different ways that I can, you know, engage in self-care practices that are in service of my nervous system and yes. kind of the recovery of that.
Serve that nervous system. Oh,
yes.
My God. I love that. Hey, time for a quick break to thank today's sponsor. Today's episode is being sponsored by BetterHelp, the world's largest online counseling service. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. It is available worldwide and you can access your account at any time. You can send a message to your counselor or you can schedule your weekly sessions, again, all online. Plus, if you decide that your counselor isn't a good match for you, which happens, it is easy and more importantly, free to switch counselors if you need to. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and there are lots of different kinds of therapists with different identities who work for them. There's even financial aid available, which I really like because this makes it a more accessible option for grad students, in addition to offering perhaps more diverse therapists or more therapy modalities than might be available in your area. To the handful of listeners who have used the affiliate link that I'm about to repeat to everyone listening, take this as a virtual hug from me to you. I am really proud of you, and I really hope that this is helping. As a dear grad student listener, you can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/deargradstudent. That's BETTERHELP. Again, the full link for 10% off your first month is betterhelp.com/deargradstudent. You can also find that link at the bottom of the episode description or on the support page of the podcast website, and it will take you right to that 10% off offer. Okay, back to your favorite podcast. So after you know, see a client who's going through a difficult situation, or maybe it's just a slow buildup. How do you best practice self-care in those situations? Or maybe you're doing this at all time as like a preventative measure. What does that look like for you?
That's a great question. I think for me, in my experience, something that I routinely try to do, although definitely I think, kind of an ever-going practice and leaning into those emotions that I experience immediately after a session with a client, really honoring like what it is that I'm experiencing, sitting with that, and then choosing how to most effectively respond to those emotions. And it's certainly challenging. Like we all have a range of different ways that we kind of manage and respond to pain or sadness, anger. Absolutely.
Just said that at the same time.
In that sync. I love it.
Yeah.
And right. And they're all, like you said earlier, pieces of information that we take in. And, there are all action tendencies associated with those emotions. So, I think that for me in my experience, sitting with those emotions and really, checking the facts of the situation, right. Thinking about what is my interpretation that I am including in what had happened versus what actually had happened.
Right.
And, I think disentangling that can be really helpful to reduce some of that emotional vulnerability and reactivity.
Yeah, I feel like one of the most, I want to say, impactful things that I took away as a DBT therapist was this idea that emotions are information. I think that it can be really uncomfortable, whether this is, other clinical psych students listening or just students who maybe they're having an abusive mentor situation, to just say, I feel really angry about this. I feel really sad about this. Just admitting to ourselves that something isn't as bright and perfect and pretty as we wish it were is a hard thing to admit. And then just sitting with that, I like to think of it as if we don't sit with it, we don't know what we need, right? If we don't take in the information, we don't know how to respond to it. So one of my biggest lessons learned in grad school and just therapy has been sitting with the discomfort and just recognizing my body's telling me something. Okay, I need to listen. I think that that is so powerful. And I feel like I've had definitely unhealthy ways of dealing with it. It would be every time I had a bad day, I'd be like, Luke, get me Chipotle. And then I just had Chipotle 4 times a week, which good for the mind, not so good for the body. But good for the mind. And so once you go through this emotional processing, do you have do you get a massage? Do you take a bath? Do you take a day off? What has worked just for you personally? Maybe give some folks some ideas of things to try.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, what I find really helpful is exercise and different types of exercise. So, I really enjoy bike riding and, they have wonderful bike trails here in Milwaukee that I love. And so I found that to be really helpful, as well as strength training and other forms of cardio. And also really, taking time, myself to just kind of sit with and reflect on just my life and taking that time to go inward. I find myself to be kind of a mix of introvert and extrovert. So, there are times that I like to engage socially, but then, other times where I like to, just kind of be in more of a contemplative state kind of reflect on my experiences as a graduate student.
I'm totally the same way.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, it's I either am don't talk to me, or I'm oh, me and my closest 50 friends, yeah, we're going out. And that there's no in between.
Yeah. And, and kind of like you were speaking to earlier, I think it's really important to kind of reflect on the tendencies to engage in certain behaviors and whether those are in service of kind of our values. And for me, it's if I find myself kind of in more of that contemplative state over a period of, period of time, and I haven't maybe spoken to my family as often or maybe engaged with other of my friends, it's it makes me think about, okay, well, is this really serving me, and is this helpful in leading the life that is of kind of worth living and
right, all that DBT stuff. Yeah. This is a great point to bring up, because I think my issues in the past is that I get stuck in that rut before I realize I'm going there. And then once I'm stuck in that place of not leaving the house, only binge watching TV shows, barely being able to get an hour of work done a day, and then being mad at myself that I'm burnt out, which doesn't fix it. One of the biggest things I feel like, and this really goes, I guess we can move into some pieces of advice here, learning to know yourself so that you know when you're headed that way to help sort of curb that, right? So every once in a while, Luke will point out, he'll be like, have you left the house in the last few days? And I'll be like, no. And so I'll be like, let's go for a walk, or go to the grocery store to get, I don't know, one thing I need just to get out of the house, you know? So those are like triggers for me personally, because I'm such a homebody. Like staying home for COVID, I was like, what a relief. I don't have to leave my house. So I literally was like living my best life. I have cats and food here, air conditioning, like bet I'm never leaving. So I have learned the like behaviors in me that show me that I'm burning out, that show me that I'm taking an emotional load that I'm not dealing with or processing in personal or grad school life. These all come out in really similar patterns. So this kind of reminds me of other episodes I've done where a big theme has been like, learn your own patterns, learn the information your body and mind are telling you, and just like experiment with what helps get you out of that rut. I am curious what advice you have, especially for students who are studying difficult things, or like, I think I said this before we started recording, like you can imagine like someone whose family has experienced a cancer death or Alzheimer's, and maybe that motivated them to research it. But now every day they're reminded of this like very emotional life situation. What advice do you have for any of those folks that are, you know, really dealing with an emotionally heavy PhD?
Yeah, you know, I think I'll just start with like what we've been kind of talking about. And, you know, that's around kind of tuning into your nervous system and connecting like data points around, metaphorically speaking, of course, like around how our nervous system reacts. And, you know, this could be in the context of the relationships that we have with our advisor or other faculty in the program that we're in, you know, others in our cohort, or even just like other relationships that we have in our life or things that we do. Like, think about, you know, in terms of our research, like what fascinates us, what excites our nervous system, you know, and that can be really valuable as we, you know, think about how we want to pursue or what topics we want to pursue in our training.
I'm like living for this nervous system thing, because you just reminded me of another DBT thing that I'd like to share with folks. Is like one of the biggest skills that we teach in DBT, and like DBT skills are so good for everyone, let me start by saying, but one of the biggest ones is changing your biology, right? So if you're really, really angry, if you're really, really sad, if you're really, really frustrated, some of the good things, which it literally is because of your nervous system, just help switch that off a bit, right? So for example, in DBT, we might say like immersing your face in a bucket of cold water literally slows down the system. You might not need this if you're listening, but what Ben is talking about could be like, are you feeling slow, sluggish, burnt out? Maybe go for a fast 1 mile run just to get your body and your nervous system doing something else. That whole idea of like snapping yourself out of it, like it actually can very literally work, and I think can be really helpful. But continue, you just like got me really excited, and I had to say that, and I was like, excite that nervous system.
Yes, those tip skills are real, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, I think that, you know, that's such a powerful and important point around, you know, changing our physiology. And, you know, another thing that, you know, I think about is a clarification of some of our values and committing towards valued living. Like, I know
love
that's such a, like,
work,
a,
don't you? You know, so
like a clinical, right, yes. Right. You
but
know,
it's useful.
Yeah. And I think too, the frequency, intensity, duration of the emotions that we experience, you know, they might vary depending on, you know, what activities that we're engaging in. Like, are those in alignment with our values? And if not, you know, that resistance that we're experiencing might be information trying to communicate that to us.
Yes. I love this. This reminds me of like, there are lots of times I get frustrated with myself because I'm like, I'm an active person. I did sports my whole life, and I like, I'm having a really hard time keeping a schedule with that. And then I just get frustrated that I'm not in line with that value. And it's not even necessarily like a health thing as much as it is like the mental relief of working out. So that's can be an example. Other people might have like, they don't do pottery like they used to. They don't do this. Like grad school takes a lot of time. That might mean that things that you value, you don't engage with as much. And just that lessening of engagement can cause a ton of distress. And so I love this idea of like reflecting on your values to identify, what am I not doing that is part of my value system? What am I doing too much of that isn't part of my value system?
Right.
And also like not judging what your value system is. Like I love binge watching trash reality TV shows, and it makes me feel great. I love the escape. It doesn't really negatively affect me. And I used to judge myself for that. Like I watched every single season of America's Next Top Model my first year of grad school. And I used to like not tell people why. That's me. Yeah, that made me feel great. I accomplished that. I did that, you know? So not judging what your values are, I think, is important too.
Definitely. Yeah. Really, like, you know, stepping into, you know, our truth and our true authentic selves. Like,
yes.
And that's kind of what I pick up from, you know, your little anecdote there is like, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about and honoring like all the parts of us, you know, the parts of us where, you know, we might not shine a spotlight on, you know, because we might feel, you know, self-conscious, ashamed, you know, a range of different emotions. And, you know, I think the more that we can, you know, kind of step into and honor like who we are, like what's important to us, being compassionate with, you know, the various like coping mechanisms that we've used, you know, throughout our lives, recognizing like, you know, those might have helped us at one point or, you know, continue to do so in a way, I think that could be really valuable to reduce any kind of judgment or kind of self-criticism that we might hold, you know, around like self-care practices in, you know, being a graduate student.
And like the distress that comes with the judgment, right? Like judgment isn't a neutral thing to feel. Like that doesn't feel like a neutral emotion to me. I love what you have said because this has been such a theme for me in my personal life that I have brought to so many episodes of this podcast. Really over the last 2 years, accepting who I really am has been a really difficult thing. And the podcast has been a big part of that. I have a very big personality that some people really, really dislike. And that used to really bother me. I used to be like, what is wrong with me that people don't like me when they first meet me, that I annoy people, that I'm this or that. And I have gotten over that mostly, but I have worked really hard at it. Or the fact of like, I now, at every chance I get, either on this podcast or in real life, like I remind people that I'm bisexual because of the distress that I held just by not telling people. Like just by people thinking that I wasn't, I was literally like, you're not seeing the full picture of me, and that causes me distress. I'm such an open book that I'm like, I want to tell people about me to have a full understanding of me because I'm a big personality person. I just love that you're like lean into your authentic self because I just have talked so much about that on the podcast. That was like, I couldn't have planned that if I tried. That was excellent and such a good point and so true. Like it has changed my life to do so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that, you know, with me as well as obviously like the other podcast listeners.
Yes.
I really, in many ways, resonate with that story, and me leaning into my own authenticity has been certainly a journey over mainly the pandemic period, kind of leaned into my own and explored my gender identity more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's been an experience that I'm so grateful for. You know, I think I share similar sentiments around, you know, that concealment for so long around,
so
you know,
long.
My own gender identity and expression, and, you know, recognizing and shining a light on that has been so valuable to help me honor myself more and, you know, really just,
yes.
you know, be able to kind of recognize my own needs to be seen. You know, we all want to be seen and heard for who we are, right?
Yes, that you worded it so perfect. It's like, it's the need to be seen.
Yes.
I want people to see who I really am, because I feel like when other people see it, then I can be it.
Absolutely. And it can help foster that, you know, authentic connection and vulnerability that's so important within relationships.
Yeah, it's like healing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that, you know, all these ideas around clarifying your values, stepping into your authentic self, I think really are, I would say, like essential in graduate school. And
yeah.
I think can only help in identifying particular self-care practices that, you know, might most effectively help us in overcoming, you know, the range of like burnout and stress that graduate students experience.
One thing is that I feel like grad students are such perfectionists in a way. All of us are in a difficult field, right? If you're a PhD student, you've already worked your ass off. I think that it's just so important to know that like you won't be perfect at this all the time, and that this is also a journey, just like your writing, just like your presentation skills. Like you have to learn it. And just because we've known ourselves for X number of years our whole lives doesn't mean that we know how to take best care of ourselves right now at this year, during COVID, during all these things. And I feel like that is such an important self-care tip.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we all have kind of the stories we tell ourselves, or, you know, the narratives that, you know, we might have held throughout our lives. And, you know, sometimes, you know, those voices can be, you know, louder or quieter at times, you know, depending on, you know, what it is that is presenting itself. And I think, you know, for many graduate students, graduate school and, you know, working on your PhD presents itself with a range of different, you know, challenges. And those challenges might introduce some of these harsh critics that, you know, might have thought we silenced our whole lives, or we thought we were kind of like done with that and ready to move on. And, you know, I think that all these new situations and, you know, as graduate students can really present itself with different things that we might need to reconcile, or lessons that, you know, we're still working on learning.
Yeah, like it like bubbles up anything that's under the surface that we're just keeping under the surface. Yeah,
absolutely. And then, you know, too, I think it's really beneficial to reflect on kind of the different resources that we have as graduate students and PhD students, whether that's, you know, in terms of our social support systems, as well as, you know, the financial or material resources that we have. You know, some of the ways that we manage and respond to stress might differ depending on the kind of arsenal of resources that we have available. And so I think, you know, being mindful of where we are and the range of different resources that we have available, I think that can be helpful for honoring the different behaviors that we might engage in, or stress that we might experience, because, you know, we might be able to respond to that stress in a different way.
Definitely. And one thing that I really like that you put in our notes is this like bucket example. I love the bucket example. Use it as a therapist. Do you want to talk about the bucket example?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've heard this bucket example from a couple friends, and, you know, I really appreciate it. It's, you know, this idea of, you know, recognizing, you know, what fills your bucket, you know, versus what depletes your bucket.
Chipotle fills my bucket.
Yes. Qdoba fills my bucket. But, you know, we could still.
I don't know, if we can be friends.
Should I just end this? Like,
thank you all so much for listening, and I will. No, just kidding.
You know, I think that could be really powerful, and I think relates to the discussion around values that we had earlier. And I think recognizing where, you know, the brim of our bucket is, or where our limits are, can be really valuable. And trying to anticipate that, or engage in strategies so that, you know, your bucket doesn't start to overflow and become unmanageable. And, you know, what I try to do, and I'm certainly not perfect at this, is engaging in activities that, you know, fill my bucket as opposed to deplete them. And, you know, recognizing, like, when it is that I need to start refreshing the bucket, if you will. And
I love the bucket. I'm telling you, like, I don't know what it is, too, but, like, when I talk about my needs as, like, a metaphorical bucket, it just makes me smile. And so I just, like, I'm obsessed with it. And I really want to end off this piece, this like advice segment, I suppose, with your last point, which I love to say in this podcast, but I also just think it's so crucial for this kind of episode. You know, if you are researching an emotional topic, or if you're just researching that's something that's emotional for you, there's no doubt in my mind that you are doing your best that you can do right now. I know this. As grad students, we've worked our ass off to get here. We know how to work hard. We know how to do a good job. And so there's no doubt in my mind you're doing your best. And just know that skills with taking care of yourself are like skills with grad school, and they change over time. And your point earlier, Ben, about like what you need right now might not be what you needed before, and what you needed before may not be serving you now. And that like flexibility and adaptability of like figuring out what 26-year-old Alana needs is very different than what 22-year-old Alana needs. And that can be hard and frustrating. Like, didn't I just get this figured out? Can I be done now? And the answer is no. And right. So reminding yourself you're doing your best and practicing that kind of flexibility, I just think is so important. And this was Ben's bullet point, so I'm taking it. I'm so sorry. I love it, though. I just had to say it.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, really having that unconditional positive regard for ourselves, like we would, you know, have for our clients, and, you know, recognizing that, like, right now in this circumstance, like, we are doing the absolute best that we can with the knowledge that we've acquired over our lives, yes. the skills that we developed and refined, yeah. and, you know, the resources that we have available. And, you know, recognizing, like you said, it's like that can change at every point. And that just honoring that, like, you know, that we're doing the best that we can. And, you know, we can certainly strive to do better. But just, yeah. you know, sitting with that realization, I think, can help when the inner critic starts to come out or yes. the imposter, you know, syndrome yes. starts to surface.
So common, so relatable. And, you know, I want to say one other thing before we move on to final thoughts. I think that if you're listening to this episode right now and you are having a feeling like, wow, I have a lot of work to do on myself, or I have a lot of reflection to do, if you're feeling maybe a little overwhelmed, I also want to say how positive and how rewarding and how crucial it can be for some folks to learn additional skills in therapy. Therapy can be a really wonderful thing. Most people who have been listening to this podcast for a long time know that the podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. I can include a link at the bottom. It's one accessible option. There are probably more accessible options as well on your campus, whether that be the counseling center. Often the psychology department on your campus will run a clinic that is free or cheap to students, which a lot of people won't know about separate from the counseling center. If you have student health insurance, sometimes there are people local who are in network for you that you can see as well. And so I just want to continue the theme on this, I don't know how many episodes of this podcast, to say, if you want to go to therapy, that's a wonderful thing. Therapy is a wonderful thing. And you get to learn about some of these things too. Like, it's okay to feel like it's a lot to do this on your own. So I just wanted to empower anyone. Wow, that was dramatic, but true. I do. I want to empower anyone listening. If this is something that's telling you, hey, maybe I should talk to someone for the first time, I'm really proud of you. And, like, I'm really happy for you if you're taking that step after listening to this episode. And if you're not, I'm happy for you too. But I just wanted to give some permission and acknowledgement to folks who are overwhelmed after listening, because you and I are at such a place of understanding therapy and doing some of this self-work because it's been necessary working with clients who have dealt with certain things. And it's an ongoing process. But for folks who are noticing this in themselves for the first time, it can be an overwhelming feeling. It can be new, and new can feel scary sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, the more that we can really have that self-compassion for where we're at and, you know, the difficulties that we're having, I think that, and seeking out those resources that might be available. And,
exactly.
you know, I think those can all really be beneficial. And I don't know, it's part of that, the process of being a graduate student. All helping us develop into the people that we're meant to be, in my view, at least.
Yes, I agree. Maybe not the people that others want us to be, but the person that wherever we're supposed to be will land.
Exactly.
Well, let's move on to final thoughts. Final thoughts are takeaways or bullet points. You know, I like to say I like to do the executive functioning for my guests because we, as always, talked about a million things. What would your final thoughts be about today's episode?
Yeah, so I think for me, one of my final thoughts would be recognizing when, or I guess if, a page starts to flip open in our lives as we're doing, you know, trauma research or, you know, engaging in an emotionally difficult topic. And, you know, this is a analogy that, you know, I know the prolonged exposure for PTSD manual uses. And, you know, it's the idea that when we've experienced a trauma, we haven't read the book from start to finish. And that, you know, as a result, the book flips open, you know, at different points of our lives. And,
sure.
you know, those can represent triggers. So, you know, like anything, we might have something in our life that activates us and might, you know, flip open to a particular page. And I think, you know, if that's the case, really kind of recognizing that and seeking the support, whether that's, you know, through a therapist or, you know, another mental health professional, or seeking support from your social support network, I think can be really, really valuable, especially when engaging in, you know, emotionally involved topics or topics that kind of range around traumatic events and,
yeah.
and violence, things like that. And so I think that would be, you know, one of my main takeaways. And I think another one is, you know, recognizing again, like, you know, what's important to us, you know, as graduate students in this new chapter, and, you know, what is serving us and what is no longer serving us,
yes.
and how can we engage in more of what's serving us and engaging less in what isn't serving us.
The bucket.
Yes, the bucket.
I'll never let it go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a really central theme around this conversation. And, you know, I think the extent that we can kind of cultivate more self-care practices that kind of fill that bucket up, I think is really important as graduate students and, you know, graduate students studying more of these emotionally charged topics.
I love those final thoughts. I'm trying to do this new thing this season where I don't take my guests' final thoughts, no matter how good they are. So I'm going to come up with some of my own. I think one of mine, this is a takeaway for so many episodes, but I think particularly for this one, like when we think about studying emotional topics that may touch our lives or may, you know, affect us in some way, the idea of like leaning into who we are and like where we're at and being in tune with that is so crucial, or at least I'll say has been so crucial for me, and is something that we regularly teach in therapy, so I have to assume is crucial for others as well. Getting to know yourself can be a really scary journey. Looking at who you truly are and embracing that can be a really uncomfortable thing if we haven't done that before, and like you said, may flip a page and activate some things we didn't know about. So this isn't necessarily an easy journey by any means, but I think that if you're passionate about a topic that also, you know, touches your heart in some way, it's important you take care of yourself through that, and that you can still research and you can still do that topic, but taking care of yourself, it's got to be number one. I think both can happen, but both should happen. I do want to also say that a final thought is like the changing of the physiology, because that for me has been super powerful. Sometimes I just do this in the shower. I'll like let hot or cold water run over my face. And that can help me feel refreshed after the shower. I like that you bike ride. I just imagine you like bike riding through a field of cheese, even though like, I know that's not how cheese happens, but like, I know this, I don't know why, but that's just like what I imagine.
A cow on the horizon.
Yes. Oh my God. You know, Luke likes to play this game every time we drive by cows where he opens up the window and screams, "Hey, cow." And then however many cows look towards you is like how many points you get. I don't know. Midwestern things. so you can try that next time. But being outside has been really big for me. So just figuring out what changes your physiology to help you snap out of that thing. But Ben, it has been such a pleasure to have you on this podcast with your expertise in this area, just as somebody with lived experience doing the work in this area and coping through it and being in the middle of grad school. I mean, your journey with this isn't over. Right. You're just in the middle of it. And so I appreciate you just talking about like, this is what I've learned. This is where I'm at. And that could change for you too. But thank you for bringing your truth to the podcast today.
Yeah. Thank you, Alana. It's been such a pleasure connecting with you on this podcast. Yes. And, you know, for you to invite me on, like I feel so honored, like truthfully, like, And it's been such a journey and it'll continue throughout my PhD. And I think, you know, I'm just trying to embrace that and really, you know, lean into whatever experiences present themselves and know that, you know, it's all in service of, you know, my own well-being and life. Ugh,
literally so beautiful. With that, why don't we remind people where they can connect with you online? I don't know if your DMs are open or how you feel about that, but I'm sure that, I mean, this has been powerful for me personally. Like, I know you've seen my facial expressions. Every time you say something, I'm literally like, oh my God, like, say it, like, oh, I'm dying. But I like keep quiet because you're speaking and I'm like working on that. Where can people connect with you online if they're like, holy shit, that was amazing, I need to talk to them?
Yes, please feel free to DM me on Twitter, and, you know, feel free to email me as well. Maybe I can include that in the show notes or the, you know, podcast episode description.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Whatever you want. Go to your website.
Yes, please feel free to reach out to me. And I know that graduate school can be such a challenging experience and rewarding, you know, both yes. can coexist.
Let's not forget, it's also good sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And please feel free to reach out to me if I could be of, you know, service or, you know, support you in any way. I'd love to the extent that I can. So
yeah, well, because I'm sure there are other grad students that study tough topics like you who might even just say, I just resonated. Like, I don't even need anything, but like, thank you.
Yes, you know, definitely. Please feel free to message me there as well.
Yeah. Well, Ben, thank you for the millionth time for being a guest on this podcast. Listeners, thank you all for continuing to listen to the podcast that I started during quarantine. And I will talk to you all next week. Hashtag bye.
You
can connect with Dear Grad Student on Twitter at Dear Grad Student, on Instagram at Dear Grad Student Pod, and on Facebook at Dear Grad Student. Everything that you need for the podcast can be found on the podcast website at deargradstudent.com. If you're looking for merch, you can go to the website, click merch in the menu at the top, or look me up on Redbubble. If you just want to listen to me ramble online, you can find me on Twitter at Alana_Gloger. That's ELANA_GLOGER. And of course, everything for this podcast is made possible by the amazing podcast patrons. If you want to help out, you can join them at patreon.com/deargradstudent for $1, $3, $5, or $10 a month. If you want to help out the podcast in other ways, you can leave a review. Best place for that is Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Google Podcasts. Be sure that you are following Dear Grad Student on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you find your other favorite shows to be sure that you are notified when each episode goes live. As a reminder, all resources and links mentioned in today's episode can be found in the description. And until next time, warmest regards, best wishes, sincerely, Alana.